It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Located in LaGrange, Illinois, Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
We promised to do this before the end of 2012, and it is December 30th.
The last Sunday of the year.
Yes, so we are completely sticking to our word.
The last chance edition.
Yes, and it's after the world was supposed to end, which is, I think, probably the only thing that motivated us to do this.
Probably. We got that second lease on life.
Yeah, I think part of us was thinking, well, the world's going to end. I really don't need to do this. But I'm John Clark, and I am joined by my co-host, Steven Brown. And today we have in the studio Joe Pakovitz.
Hello, hello.
Who is here for our first topic. Now, as we planned this, we talked about a number of topics, each of which became not timely. We were going to talk about Skyfall. We did not record
Weeks ago.
Yes, when Skyfall came out.
Yeah.
We did not record a podcast.
Right.
We were going to do Christmas. We did not. No. We missed Christmas. But, so this week, we are going to... This week something happened, and when something happens that basically destroys the entire fan base, we should be talking about it. And this week it is Amazing Spider-Man 700, which we have not talked about yet. We all have our opinions on it. We have not shared them. But Joe sent me a couple of very angry emails.
That's awesome.
Which is why Joe is here.
That's awesome.
I got to read it early. I should mention this before. Steven is the owner of Chimera's Comics.
Which co-owner.
Co-owner. He's the sponsor of the show. We'll have Carmelo later in the show in his own segment because he does not sit still.
No, not for long.
He would be gone already. The headphones would be on the floor.
And he'd be off doing
something. He'd be in a car and texting you.
Yeah.
So, also, the show is called Caffeinated Comics, and today we are drinking Caribou. I am drinking a turtle.
This is a mint.
And I've got the vanilla. Okay.
So if you have a metronome, by the time you'll know how far we've gotten through the coffee by how fast we're talking.
There you go. That's actually a good point.
So I actually read 700 a little early.
Holiday shipping. We pick up the books. They shipped 4 or 5 titles last week. So we got those early. So we've had the book for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, so we had a chance to look at it and really think about it. We did not sell it to anyone.
No, you can't sell it early. Diamond, they'll slap you on the wrist. They give you the comics.
Yeah, and you really shouldn't record on a podcast that we're doing things that will make Diamond cut us off.
Yeah, so we did sell it on the street date that they solicited for it.
Yes.
Legally.
But we've all had a look at it, and so obviously we're going to have to go to major spoilers. I think it's common knowledge by now. Yeah. Superior Spider-Man is coming out this coming week.
This Wednesday.
It'll probably be out by the time this podcast launches, so I think we can talk about it. Because really, one major thing happens in the story, and that's the spoiler. It's not one of those books where 17 things are going on.
There's one big bombshell in this book.
Right.
There isn't, it's the conclusion of a lot of storylines, but I think there's, in this particular issue, there's one thing that everyone's talking about.
And that thing is?
And that thing is that Peter Parker dies, and Doc Ock takes over his body. Actually, that happens in the reverse. Doc Ock takes over his body, and then Peter Parker
dies. Yeah, Doc Ock takes over his body, Peter Parker's put in Dr. Octopus's dying body.
Yes.
And then most of the issues are a cool fight.
But they fight to the death.
They fight to the death, and Peter dies in Doc Ock's body.
Doc Ock's body.
So Superior Spider-Man is going to be Doc Ock in a Spider-Man suit.
In his body, too.
Yes.
And he has all Peter Parker's memories. He knows all his relatives. He's got... He has all the tools to pass as Peter Parker.
Right. So people have sent Dance Like death threats on Twitter.
Yes. Which is crazy because this is like a fictional character, and they killed Superman, you know, like 10, 20 years ago or whatever.
And that's a crazy thing because nobody thinks Doc Ock is going to be Spider-Man forever.
Yeah.
No.
Like when the second movie comes out, are they going to go, well, in the comics, Spider-Man is Dr. Octopus. who you will remember was Alfred Molina, who no longer counts.
Exactly. Right. And what if, you know, this book tanks, if Superior Spider-Man tanks, he'll be back in 6 months.
Like, right. It's just Marvel, a question of when does Peter Parker come back.
And the Death Threat is crazy because it's like,
Azrael as Batman.
Right. Yeah. You don't think he's going to come back. Like, the Death Threat is what gets me. It's crazy.
Well, and not only that, but this has happened before, kids. Yeah. Remember Kraven's Last Stand, anyone?
Yeah, where he's buried alive.
Exactly. Yep, true.
And I think
wait, let's not forget the 3 years of Ben Reilly.
Right.
Yeah.
Which
I mean,
was we were saying before in the '90s. The thing that makes me confident about this, and I'll be the first one to take the step out, is that I'm intrigued. I like Dan Slott. I have liked Dan Slott since he was part of the Brand New Day team when he was trading off with guys like Mark Waid and Guggenheim and Zeb Wells. So I really like Dan Slott, and he's done a few things that I haven't liked, and he's always paid it off. Like, he promised to bring the original Hobgoblin back, who's my favorite villain, and then in the last page, he cut his head off. I was not happy about that, but then the guy who paid it off later.
Right, you find out later that the guy who cut his head off is actually the real Hobgoblin.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I mean, like, you know, they've done crazy things before. Remember that Moreland villain? Spider-Man ate a guy's face and got all these extra, like, crazy superpowers.
Oh, the other
during
the Straczynski
and then
run.
He got killed. They killed him, and he came back, so it's like, people always are just like, let it be. Let the story keep progressing. Some writer will fix it, or he'll write his way out of this corner he's written himself into.
Right.
The guy has to have a plan. You don't do a move like this.
Everything is a story. I mean, back in the 90s, you couldn't say that. That's what makes me confident, is that I know Slott has an exit strategy.
Yeah.
I know he has a story. He might save it for a while. If Superior Spider-Man's doing well, he will push it back a year.
Yeah.
But he has a story where Peter comes back and becomes Spider-Man again. He's got it.
This is them killing Captain America and putting Bucky in Cap's costume.
Right. They knew where they were going. Whereas in the 90s, when they took Wolverine's adamantium away, they had no freaking idea how they were going to put it back. When they killed Reed Richards and Doom, it was 2 years, and Sue Storm became a skank.
Right.
Yeah.
And they just had no clue where they were going to go with it. Or Ben Reilly.
Yeah. How long did the Clone Saga last?
It lasted 2.5 years, and it kept changing course.
Right.
It was like,
Peter Parker is Spider-Man. No, he's not. No, he's the clone. No, he's not the clone.
Ben Reilly's
the original.
Real. Now he's blonde. Yeah. Now he's
and there were like 12 different clones. There was Kane. Mm-hmm. There was Spider-Side.
Right,
there were all these other guys running around like...
Right.
Well, I think from the fans' reaction, there seems to be a center of gravity developing. I mean, obviously, you're going to have reactions across the board from, wow, this is great, squee, to, you know, I'm done with Marvel. I'll never read Marvel again.
Yeah.
I think it was Steve Wacker. I read a thing of Steve Wacker was, that if you look back through your emails, it's the same six guys who have quit Marvel every year for the last 6 years.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm never reading Marvel again.
Right. Yeah. Disney buys Marvel. Oh, I'm never reading another Marvel book. And it's
I won't see Avengers.
Yeah.
I'm the only one in the world
who hasn't seen Avengers. My dog has seen Avengers by now,
right,
I think.
Yeah.
But
anyone who's walked by Chimera's Comics has seen Avengers.
Yeah. I've got to have some kind of world record for watching
it. It is to the fact where I came in yesterday and just the Soundgarden song was on. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
There's nothing else you could be watching?
I might have a problem.
You do. And yet, we're going to get into this later show. Yet, you have not seen other Joss Whedon shows.
Our next podcast is Steve reciting the entire script of Avengers by heart.
And I'll do all the characters, too. I don't have them prepared for today, but I'll have all the characters.
I think we should get a video camera, and I will give you the Marvel Legends figures.
Just
there you go.
Just keep them out of the Black Widow costume, okay? That's all I ask.
But now, Joe, you had this... Before we go into the other opinions, which I know you've scoured from the internet, your opinion was pretty strong. Now, how do you... Now, you've already agreed that, okay, he's going to come back, it's fine, but you're still not that happy about this.
No, I mean, when I first read it, I was kind of virulent irate, as you alluded to. The things that I objected to personally were the suddenness of Doc Ock's conversion. I mean, here's a guy who, up until about the third to last panel, was going to kill Spider-Man, just kill him. He was still evil, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, now I'm good. I will be the Spider-Man better than you ever could.
Well, I did buy that during the story it was fairly subtle that they were influencing each other, because Peter and Doc Ock's body was like starting to yell at the other guys in the Sinister Six and command them.
Yeah.
And because they were a meld of each other's psyche, they were pushing each other.
My explanation for it, or rationale for it, is, you know, Spider-Man's dying, and in his last moment, his life's flashing before his eyes. But him and Doc Ock have a psychic connection, so he shares his life flashing before his eyes with Doc Ock. So Doc Ock lives his entire life up until that moment in the blink of an eye.
Right, to the point where you see Doc Ock in the place of Peter Parker in some of the panels.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like a near-death experience,
so
I think, that affects
like
him.
It's kind of like the Next Generation episode that you never watched.
Right, because it's sci-fi.
where Picard lives an entire life of a people because it's beamed into his head. See, I thought it was like the longer they spent in each other's bodies, the more the remnants of their brain was affecting
them. And I think that's where they're going with it, is kind of like
more evil in Doc Ock's body, and Otto Octavius was turning more good.
Yeah, I mean, the only other book that's come out is Avenging Spider-Man, I think it's 14 or 15.1, mm-hmm. and it's the first 3 days of Doc Ock in his body, and it's like a mugger runs by, and he hits the guy, and he's like, why did I do that? Well, it must have been a reflex. And it's, I think they're already hinting at Peter Parker is influencing.
It's in his subconscious.
It's subconscious, I think.
I think it's almost like going to be like a Banner Hulk thing.
I think so. Like, it's to placate,
like,
I think.
Does Peter become a voice in Otto's head?
I think so.
Saying, don't kill these people.
But I don't think it'll be that.
Don't put metal arms on Spider-Man.
Yeah. Right. I don't think it'll be that heavy-handed. I think it'll be more subtle, where it's like he'll be doing things like, well, why am I doing this?
Right.
You know, it'll be more like...
Well, I would have preferred
less heavy,
because obviously the backstory was that, you know, during one of the fights with the goblins, one of the, you know, Octobots, you know, tapped Peter Parker, and implanted the whatever it is that allowed them to change personalities and change bodies in the first place. Now, you would have thought that if that process was going on and Peter's, you know, he had that connection long before that those last few panels, that we would have been seeing that.
He does say, if you'd been reading it for a while, the ends of the earth, the big ends of the earth story with Sinister Six, was Peter beats Otto Octavius by using his mind control,
right,
and attacking him. And that basically led in like this biological mental virus. So it had been affecting him for the last 7 or 8 issues. But it's true, he hadn't addressed it. It wasn't like a B story.
Yeah, and that's something I think would have made this story better, is like Joe said, if it had been for the last 7 or 8 issues, he was being more violent or more arrogant, more Doc Ock personalities, I think that would have been
easier. Like when he had the black costume, he was getting more aggressive.
Exactly.
Right.
I agree. That would have.
I think the problem with it, though, is that would have leaked the story early. And I don't think anyone knew this was coming until it hit. Like, you don't ever... Who would have thought of this? Oh, they're going to switch minds. Like, that's such, like, a Freaky Friday.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's kind of silly, you know?
And there's still the trade kind of influence where they want everything to be self-contained. So when they did that Hobgoblin story, they wanted it to be just a Hobgoblin story.
Right.
Like, they didn't want... They don't want to go back to the days of the 70s and 80s where there's no beginning and no end. I read an interview with Joe Quesada where he said the hardest thing about bringing back old material in trade paperbacks is finding where the beginning and the end of the story is. Because back then, you know, in the Claremont days, everything is, we're carrying this B story for a year, then we pay it off, but within that payoff is like 3 more stories that go on.
Right.
Yeah, so you get these trades that are like, you know, issues 160 to 162, skip a few...
Yeah, mm-hmm.
and it's
a mess, and especially now that they're writing for trades. None of these writers are writing single one-shots. Very few books are writing where it's like a one-off 22-page story, and that's all connected.
Right.
You know,
there's talk about doing more of that with digital and with iPad apps. But still, it's like if you have a big story, you're not going to do it in one issue.
No. And they shouldn't always limit it themselves, but they're all writing, they're very clear 6-issue stories. You see the rise and fall of every story, you know when it's going to hit the fever pitch and then calm down. Like, it's very formulaic.
It's like watching a movie now.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, I'll do that in movies where I'm like, well, this is happening. I think we're in act 2 now, and I will check my watch in the movie, and I'm like, are 45 minutes in? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they are starting to follow that, and they're usually 6 issues, so they can do one. They can sell a $25 trade out of that.
Right.
Yeah, because it's so many pages and they've got it wrapped up.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that as long as it's a good story. I don't mind, you know, I'm not one of those people who's like, you're writing for the trade and you're padding. I think 10 years ago, there was a lot of padding going on. There was there was a lot of stories where you could read, you could read Ultimate Spider-Man 12, you could read 12 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man in about 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Which might be a little... lean,
right?
Yeah,
and
for
nothing,
12 issues, that's
and
an
nothing
entire
changed
year's
plot-wise.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely nothing
consequence
happened.
He would fight Green Goblin and Kraven within those 12 issues. Now, granted, Mark Bagley can draw those 12 issues in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I think makes fans nervous is the future of the book and how Superior Spider-Man's going to play out. you know, we have editor Stephen Wacker saying, we want to do Spider-Man by way of Batman a little creepier and darker. That's a direct quote. And I think that for people who are fans of the book Spider-Man, one of the joys of reading it is that unlike legions and legions of other superheroes who are fairly, you know, whatever their other admirable characteristics are, they're, you know, fairly stolid, they're fairly straightforward. The villains always get the funniest lines. They're not witty, they're not funny. Spider-Man is always witty, he's funny, he's cheeky.
Yeah.
Like Spider-Man and The Thing are the two Marvel guys that are really allowed to be funny.
Right. And that,
no one on the X-Men is allowed to be funny.
Yeah, exactly. They're all like grim and gritty and it's
they
like
are
they're
fired the yeah. minute they smile.
Right. And they've got enough X-Men where they can have that policy.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. There's always somebody willing to graduate from the New Mutants.
Yeah.
Remember me? I'm Longshot.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm smiling. That's why I'm fired.
Right.
That's why you haven't seen me for 800 issues.
Yeah. Right.
I have three fingers like Bugs Bunny.
It's like, yeah, he's too cartoony. Get rid of him.
Yeah. And a mullet.
Right.
But I just came up
with seven reasons why they should never bring Longshot back.
Who's Peter David has been using an X Factor for like the last 2 years.
You know, I love Peter David, and I never follow him when he goes to a book I don't care about. It's like we were saying about Mark Waid doing the Hulk. Mark Waid's my favorite writer, and he's getting me to read the Hulk. But honestly, I probably wouldn't even be reading it if I hadn't read the first one.
Yeah.
Because I tend to call myself a franchise whore, mm-hmm. is I will stay with a franchise way longer than I should.
Yeah.
I have, in my DVD collection, I have every Nightmare on Elm Street. I have season one of Voyager. I have Freddy versus Jason.
You're a completist.
There's always this feeling of like, I love this character. They'll probably do something I like.
Yeah.
And I will. And I think most fans are like this, and they play to it. I shouldn't, but I will probably read a terrible issue of Batman rather than buy a number one of a new Vertigo title.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, I don't know if I'm going to like that. I like Batman.
Yeah. Yep.
He got capes and things.
And it's like a gamble. You know what you're getting with Batman. You know, there's a certain... Whether it's a good or bad story,
you don't know what level of quality you're getting.
Exactly,
you're
the quality is going to vary, but you know a Batman story versus what Scalped or you know Why the Last Man or some other Vertigo title is going to be. You know exactly what keys you're getting when you grab a Batman book.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. And that's why the fans are worried about what's going to happen to Spider-Man, because all of a sudden it's like, well, if they want to do it like Batman, why don't I just go read Batman. Yeah. I've got several titles to choose from, in fact.
Or grab Daredevil.
My favorite letter.
Or Punisher, if I want to stay in the Marvel Universe.
Exactly.
I could always go that route. If I want grim and dark and creepy,
yep.
There you go.
Yeah, my favorite letter ever in comics was during Nightfall. I think it might have even been in Batman 500. I can't remember who wrote it. Hopefully people who are listening will send me a million tweets and go, you're an idiot because it's Jeff Jones.
Yeah.
It's Jeff Johns.
And then you'll be ridiculed for that.
I will be ridiculed for that. He will not follow me on Twitter.
Probably not.
No. He's not following me now.
You have nothing to lose then.
I follow him and he doesn't follow me.
Well, a lot of people are following
him. Well, how do you know? If you look behind you?
Yeah, behind me is the wall. If Jeff Johns is in the wall, he deserves to follow
me. That would be awesome. He had like ninja powers.
He'd be Kitty Pryde.
He'd also be dead.
Yeah.
If he was
Kitty Pryde.
If he's Kitty Pryde.
Yes, he would always be kind of 17.
Yeah, oddly, weirdly.
Right. But the letter I read in Batman 500, there was this long letter that just said, Dear Denny O'Neill, I love Iron Man. Iron Man's awesome. His armor is great. He's mean and cool. He's the greatest thing ever. You know who I miss? Batman.
That's awesome.
They published it. And
that's
awesome.
Good on them.
In that 500 issue where he's like...
Which you have still.
During NightQuest, when he's in the armor, yes, I've rebuilt...
You've rebought that.
I have rebuilt my 15-year Batman collection.
For anyone who doesn't know, John has a small problem with rebuying collections he's previously sold years ago.
That's what my wife says. Yeah. But, because I went...
As opposed to the rest of us who buy them all the series that we should have bought 15 years ago but didn't.
No, and save everything we've ever bought.
Exactly.
Because I've lived in smaller apartments where I go, I don't need this. Yeah. And then, but I make the mistake of, I'm going with trades now.
Yeah.
I'm going with downloads now. And then I'm going with hardcovers. I don't like trades anymore.
Yeah.
And then I have everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like, I need John Byrne's Fantastic Four in 8 different formats.
Yes. Right now, on the shelf behind you, because we're recording this in my office. Once we get the technology down pat, we're going to do it in the store.
We have the technology.
So then you can come to the store and go, this is where those guys talk.
Yeah. That's a good, yeah, there you go.
We can rope off a section.
Oh, great. Now the mobs are burning brands and pitchforks will know where to find us.
We can put mannequins dressed like us.
Yeah, we'll have an address and everything. They'll be able to find us.
Yes. Well, we will have an address because you'd like customers to come to the store.
I know. I should probably say it at some point during the podcast. Not now, though.
We will, no.
Yeah.
But behind me in my office, I have both the Stanley and Jack Kirby omnibuses and the Marvel Masterworks, and downstairs I have a good amount of the original issues.
And you have it digitally.
Yes, and I have it digitally because I bought all the GIT CD-ROMs when they made those 5-6 years ago. Yeah. I'm going with the future no matter what avenue it takes.
You got it. Because comic books.
Because comic books. I also quit buying monthlies until you opened.
Oh, you're welcome for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I should thank you for that. No, you're welcome for that. Yeah, that's the way.
So, but overall, how do you feel about 700? How do you feel about
it? I liked it because...
Are you going to read Superior?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Slott's writing it, isn't he still?
Yeah, Slott's going to stay with
it. It's his project.
In fact, I think Comic Book Resources had an interview with him, and he said when everybody switched for Marvel Now, they said, everybody's going to take a different book. What do you want to write? He went, Spider-Man.
That's awesome.
So he's like, I'll reboot it.
Yeah.
He's like, but I'm not leaving Spider-Man.
Nice. They shouldn't take him off it, though. I mean, I think this...
No, it's like Wade staying on Daredevil.
Yeah.
I mean, he's adding Hulk, but he's not leaving Daredevil.
And they should keep... Yeah, if it's a newer title and it's doing well, leave it unmolested. Right. Don't
kinda
mess
like,
with it.
It's kind of like with New 52, where they left Geoff Johns alone with Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And they didn't really change the mythology of Batman much. They put all the creative teams, but it's like... Nightfall still happened. No Man's Land still happened. He has four Robins.
In 5 years or
in
whatever
five
it
years.
Is.
So basically, Robin is a semester in Gotham
Yeah.
State. You
yeah.
take your final, you beat Mr. Freeze.
Yeah. It's a pretty bad gig, though.
Move on
because... So what are you majoring in, sidekick?
Yeah. I mean, what, there's been four Robins?
Yeah. Well, and they're all alive.
So there's been five Robins in the new DC continuity.
Well, Stephanie Brown, no one's still mentioned if she's existed. But Dick is Nightwing.
Right.
Jason Todd is Red Hood. Tim Drake is Red Robin.
Yeah.
Who at one point they said wasn't Robin. He was always Red Robin. And then
so he was
Scott
or
Snyder
wasn't
said no, they were all Robins.
And then
now Damian.
So if you're a Robin, you have 25% chance getting bashed in with a crowbar and dying.
That or
that happened.
That or I think you just say something that offends Batman. And since he's not talkative... He doesn't say anything to you for a month, and then he just goes, we're going to have to look at new options. And then you're out of the cave.
That's
like, you come home from the back cave, you go up to your room, and your bags are packed.
And he puts you on some team like Teen Titans or Outsiders or something. He's like, go join the new Outlaws. And it's like, oh, okay.
Okay.
I almost thought you made up the name the New Outlaws, and I'm like, no, that's actually
a that's a legitimate thing. Yeah. And you know what? When I thought of like, oh, I used Outsiders, Teen Titans, and I just said it, I'm like, oh, wait, that's actually a real... That's a real team. I lucked out by making something up because there's so many goofy teams in DC.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, 700.
700.
It's never been done before. A villain having like all the memories and being in the mind of a hero and then trying to do heroic things and out-moxie the hero at his own gig. That's never been done before.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing that. And
yes.
It's a step up from the Kraven's
last. Yeah, and one of the things I'm interested in is what happens when he has to fight the Sandman? What happens when he has to fight the Scorpion?
Yeah.
What happens when he has to fight the Sinister Six?
Yeah.
You know, I am interested in that.
Or team up with the Avengers, because Spider-Man's still an Avenger.
Right.
Or interact with Reed Richards.
And they said in Avengers, Spider-Man will be Otto Octavius.
Yeah, so it's in every book.
It's not going to be, you're not going to have the asterisk. This takes place before Superior.
He showed
Spider-Man
up in the last issue with Daredevil. Some girlfriend of Daredevil's or whatever goes to him and says, hey, I think Matt's out of control. He's losing it. You got to go talk to him and help him. And Spider-Man says something like, I'm going to go deal with him and I'm going to take care of him. You know, I'm going to crush Daredevil. And she's like, wait, what? Because he's crazy. He's a villain. He's not himself.
I would love it if every time he gets into a fight, he just raises his arms up and waits for his metal arms to
and then he gets like
him,
punched,
and nothing happens.
Like
the
rhino punches.
Oh crap!
He's just, he's like trying to kill people with his rib cage.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll. That's what they'll do is they'll add. He'll get like the arms again, it'll just be like, oh, well, these are spider arms now.
Maybe he brings back the Iron Spider costume.
Yeah.
That had arms.
Didn't they have Octo Spider? Isn't that a thing? Didn't Spider-Man run around with that?
I think so.
Dr. Octopus harness for a while?
They had a fat kid who had octopus arms.
I remember that.
And he wanted to be the new Dr. Octopus, and he said, no, I'm going to be Spider-Man. So then he just put on a red and blue suit over the octopus arms.
Yeah. Maybe they'll do something like that. Oh, that female Doc Ock, she was running around
for
a while.
That was Clone Saga.
There we go.
She had pink hair.
Yo, yes, she did. That means she was a dreadnought.
Is that what that means?
Yeah, that's what it means. If you have pink hair, you are automatically part of Cobra.
Right.
Or a K-pop band.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But, all right, so, and we know he's got a plan for it because you don't write yourself into this kind of corner without having a way out.
That's exactly what I come to, and that was my point about the stuff in the 90s was that they would constantly do that. It was basically like, we need a big issue. Rip Wolverine's adamantium out. How does he get it back? I'm not going to be working here when that happens.
Yeah, my run will be done. The next run will take care of that.
Yeah, and now people are saying beginning, middle, and end. And even when it doesn't happen, like when Straczynski takes a DC Comics gig in the middle of Thor, everybody's still kind of mad, even though he had done all his stories, but he didn't have a finale to it.
Yeah.
And that's what people expect now. People expect the series finale, and the new writer comes in and kind of reinvents the world without changing
it. If you're on a book and you have a long run for a long time, when you get off the book, you need to leave a big mark. Bendis did it on Daredevil. Mm. His run on Daredevil ends, Daredevil goes to prison. Then Brubaker's got to pick up the keys and figure out, all right, like, how do I, what is the next run of this book look like? And they either crash and burn or they make it bigger and better than it was before.
Yeah, you get that, you can kind of see if you follow a writer, get into a new book and they're all full of P&V and they got all these new ideas and they're ready, rip-roaring, ready to go. First several story arcs maybe are great. Then you start to see them run out of ideas. Mm-hmm. And you see them recycle things that had worked for them in the past other books.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, maybe it's time to stop, time to look at this. And then all of a sudden, the decline when it comes pretty quickly usually, where you go, oh my God, he is completely out of ideas. He has no idea where to take this.
Or else they bring in the craziest idea, which doesn't work at all.
Right.
It's like, Gwen Stacy had an affair with Norman Osborn.
And has
when did
two
that
kids.
Even happen? And they have two teenage kids that are goblin kids.
Yeah.
Like, when could that even happen? Oh, it happened in this one issue where
Spider-Man
fought
the Hulk. Spider-Man hooks up with the daughter.
Please say that didn't happen.
I could be wrong. I haven't read that since it came out. Well, I'm pretty sure.
All I remember was the premise and Mike Diodato art.
Yeah.
And then I just blocked up. When they did the Ultimate Collection, I bought only the Romita issues. In fact, a couple weeks ago, I bought the one trade that was covered in Volume 3 because it didn't have the Norman Osborn story yet.
Yeah. I think Matt has original art. He has original Diodato art from that run because of that run.
I think that's probably worth less than it was.
It might be.
It might be the cheapest Diodato art you could ever get.
Maybe. Who knows?
That and ask him to sign something.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, for me, it's... I think I'm one of those people who is... I didn't like it. I'm concerned about the future tone of the book. I'm afraid that we're going to have a wasted year where it's like, okay, this isn't really as good as quote-unquote the real Spider-Man or the amazing Spider-Man, and we're just going to be waiting for the return of Peter Parker.
Yeah,
however, that said, I think Slott deserves his chance because, I mean, he has put some real quality work into that book, so he has bought the chance to turn this
crazy
around and show us that this is not what we feared.
Right, and I'm learning from my previous mistake of Batman RIP was when Grant killed off Bruce Wayne and brought in Dick Grayson. I was like, not real Batman, and I missed some really great Grant stories, which I then had to go back and trade. And part of me is thinking of that. I'm like, what if this is as good as Batman and Robin? And I'm ignoring it because it's not Peter Parker the way I ignored Dick Grayson as Batman. And, you know, the first Scott Snyder story, Black Mirror, is a Dick Grayson story.
Yeah.
There were some really great stories. And even though, still, in theory, I don't like Dick Grayson as Batman. At the time, I was like, they did this right after Nightfall. It lasted 9 issues, and I couldn't wait for it to be over. And I'm like, now we're doing it for 2 years.
Yeah.
But, it, like you're saying, if the talent is good and if they have a good idea behind them, you can pull off something that...
Right.
That you don't want.
Yeah, as long as it's not drawn out, then we won't be sitting here, you know, 6 months doing the podcast of, well, that was a crappy 6 months of Spider-Man where, you know.
That would be a fun podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be fun for that.
I hate Spider-Man podcast.
Why we hate Dan Slott.
Why we hate Dan Slott.
Because that'll be the name of the podcast.
Yes, but we won't make death threats. Why were you going up to the line of death threats?
Right. And there's, let's be reasonable.
Still. We hope you wake up sad for no reason.
Right.
So let's switch gears. And the other thing that's going on right now that we've all experienced is, as I said, we were going to talk about Skyfall, and then we never got our acts together to plug in these microphones.
Maybe when the DVD comes out.
I think when the DVD comes out, we will.
We'll rate the extras.
Yeah, but we have all seen The Hobbit.
Yes.
Which,
The Hobbit.
Which, yeah, Joe and I saw at The Midnight Show. We saw the 3D, 48 frames per second.
And you both fell asleep.
I fell asleep twice. Joe, how many times did you fall asleep?
I nodded off somewhere in Rivendell.
Yeah, Rivendell was a good place to nod off.
Yeah.
Not a lot happened. And Joe and I think, are kind of even on Tolkien, where we're both huge fans of the books and both loved Lord of the Rings. I remember the first time I saw The Fellowship, actually the first time they showed that super trailer, I remember I went to see Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, because it was like a year before Lord of the Rings come out, and they just showed like this big trailer of it, and they showed The Fellowship, and I yelled out loud, "There's even Bilbo Pony!"
That's awesome.
And my wife, who was my fiance at the time, would not stop making fun of me. She's like, "It was a damn pony." I'm like, "You haven't read the book yet!" And then when we went to see The Fellowship, she was the only one in the theater that hadn't read it, because we saw it like the first week. And when Gandalf and the Balrog falls, and it's that silent shot of him falling, and the whole thing is quiet, my wife screamed out, "Oh no!"
That is awesome.
Ouch.
It was great. And then she was so mad at me because he did not get nominated for the first film, which I still think is a mistake. Because his work in Fellowship is way better than Two Towers or Return of the King. Because Ian McKellen, he's playing a real textured performance, whereas Gandalf the White's just kind of like a hero.
Right, right. He needs more acting. The costume doesn't do it for him as it does in the last two movies.
Yeah, and I said, "Oh, they didn't nominate him because they think they have two more chances." And she went, "What?" And then I was like, "There's so many flashbacks."
But they did that with the overall Best Picture, too. He knew that they were going to wait until the whole trilogy
wasn't
was
that like
over.
And the third movie came out.
Yeah, the third movie won everything.
Yeah, because it was the last chance. I kept putting it off, and then it was
so
like,
they gave it to the whole trilogy. And I honestly think that the third one's the weakest. I think the first one's the best. The third one won't end.
There's like 16 endings in that last
before
movie.
Before you get to the extended, and then the extended, there's 20.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, here's the last time we go to that pub we went to once.
Right.
It's kind of like when you're getting ready to move and you go and see every friend.
You're going to all your favorite places.
Yeah. Well, he filmed that.
Yeah.
Well, it's like he took it literally and filmed not only the endings, but then also filmed the appendices as well.
Yes. Which he's now doing for The Hobbit. And that's my problem with The Hobbit is, and I'm going to say now, I have a problem with The Hobbit. My problem with The Hobbit is that he's filming the appendices that he didn't film in Lord of the Rings, is that I love The Hobbit as a book, and I feel that The Hobbit is a different book.
No doubt.
It's a much lighter, it's a faster
book. It was written for his son.
Yeah.
It was the first one,
right?
It's
more episodic. It's the first one, so he hadn't really fleshed out Middle Earth. And it's a straight beeline quest. It's Bilbo and the dwarves get into this trouble. They get into this trouble. They get into this trouble. And the map just shows a straight line. They just keep moving in a straight... They get out of the mountains, and then they go to the trees, and then they go to the forest, And I feel like when Peter Jackson gave The Hobbit to Guillermo del Toro, originally I was like, oh, well, you know, he's tired. He's done it. He's been through it. And I really wanted to see del Toro do The Hobbit because I love Hellboy. I love Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
And I think the goblin designs are all del Toro. I think they kept all of that because they all look like weird Pan's Labyrinth. They all look like the people in the goblin market in Hellboy 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the goblins are like just walking around the goblin market.
Right.
Except none of them have the one iron hand.
Yeah. They just went a little too crazy with monsters in that movie.
And Peter Jackson was like, "I don't know. He's got one iron hand." He came out to a tour. He's like, "It's a great iron hand and he can shoot his hand and his hand will pick your nose and then come back into his wrist." And then he goes, "I think you're fired." Yeah. That's how every meeting goes in my head.
Yeah, every single one.
Yeah. I also wish Del Toro had done it just because Del Toro was obviously the Mexican Peter Jackson.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
You could just do the New Zealand accent talking to the Mexican accent.
Right.
And they're both tubby bearded guys.
But they're both happy little guys.
They're such happy little guys.
I can't imagine them being too upset. I mean,
yeah, they're gnomish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gnomish.
That's a good word. Yeah.
I can see both of them just like when production like collapses, they just Del Toro goes, "Guys, we have to finish the movie."
I think I need a bigger orc.
Yeah, and Peter Jackson's like, We don't have much time. We're shooting all of New Zealand this week.
Let's go meet King Kong.
King Kong.
Now, that was my biggest worry with The Hobbit, was with Lord of the Rings, we were talking, and it's like, well, he's going to use the appendices. It's going to be big. And I just kept saying, King Kong. When you watch King Kong, you go from enjoying a well-made movie to hating the seat that you are in while you are watching it.
Because you've rooted into it at that point.
It just goes on and on. They don't get to the island for an hour and 15 minutes. I remember in the theater checking my watch at an hour.
Yeah.
And going, they're on the boat.
Still on the boat.
The original movie is an hour and 18 minutes.
Yeah, they spend more time not on the island than the entire original movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and then by the time he's sliding around on the ice skating rink in Central Park, I'm like, when does this end?
That was just a
weird
scene.
Stop.
And that was my worry about The Hobbit. With Lord of the Rings, it's so big a book. It's 1,500 pages that when the extended DVDs came out, I was really excited. I was like, oh, great, more scenes of the book. And that's what it was. It's like, oh, here's this chapter they couldn't do.
Because you needed it because the theatrical release had holes where if you hadn't read the book, you were a little confused as to what exactly was going on or why something had happened.
Return of the King, I think, really suffers for that. It has so many endings.
Having never read the books, it is it's a different experience.
Have you seen the extended versions?
Yeah.
And they make a lot more sense?
Easily, yeah. My family tries to do it every year. We try to do one day
lock everyone in a room.
And it never, we've been trying to do it for since they came out, 4 years ago. We've never done it.
It's 12 hours.
It's too long.
It's an orcathon.
We did the Times Square Marathon when Return of the King came out.
Yeah, I think you were mentioning that.
Yeah, we sat in the second row because we didn't camp out for it. And so it was 4 hours.
Sore neck, yeah.
Yeah, after fellowship, they let you out for an hour. So we drank three beers really quickly just to loosen up the neck muscles. But that was the theatrical version of Return of the King. And that was still
it's still a long
movie. 11-hour day. And, you know, you showed up at 8 in the morning. You're going home at midnight.
Yeah, and I'm not really big on movies that are that long. Like, I remember seeing The Hobbit and being like, wow, this is really long, but it's no longer than any of the other ones, I'm sure.
Well, the thing that killed me about The Hobbit is that when I came home, my son is 5, and he's watching Lord of the Rings like an hour at a time. There's no way he'll sit through The Hobbit. There's no way. If I bring him to The Hobbit, I will spend 2 hours in front of the popcorn machine with him as he runs in circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we put on the Rankin-Bass animated version from 1977, which I always loved. It's terrible folk music.
Oh, yeah.
I can't watch it.
Have you ever finished it?
No. Stu brought it to the shop, and it's been there probably 4 months after we opened, so it's been there for about 14 or 15 months, I can't get through it.
I will say the voice cast is really good. The character designs are kind of cool, although Gollum is a frogman.
Yeah.
But the thing that kills me is that it's... The folk singer just keeps coming up with, and he's got this trilly Renaissance fair. He's like, which I don't think Tolkien writes 92 songs in that book. I don't think he thought of any of them with that melody at all.
Probably not.
No, I kept waiting for a character to come up and offer somebody a pickle on a stick.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't. I assumed that was from the book or something.
No Renaissance fair fans here. Apparently,
I've been to the Renaissance fair. And
would ye like a pickle on a stick? No.
Yeah, we would get drunk at the Renaissance fair and try to bring people down to earth. We also did that at goth clubs.
Down the middle earth or to earth?
We would get really drunk at goth clubs and go up to goth kids and go, I know you're happy. You're drunk and you're happy. You can smile.
Or you know how silly really you look on nice back. Sunny days?
Yeah.
Wearing all your black. That looks kind of, you know.
But when we were watching the animated version, when it got to the point where the first movie ends, I turned on the display and I said, this has been 37 minutes. The animated version does in 37 minutes what it takes Peter Jackson 3 hours. And granted, it doesn't feel like
it's
3 hours.
It moves along pretty fairly, except it takes its time.
Yeah. What terrifies me is, what if there's an extended version coming?
Well, the movie's not even done. Isn't it supposed to be 3 movies?
One of 3, yeah.
Well, that's what really scares me. It was supposed to be 2, and he shot it as 2, and then when he was editing it, he's like, now it's 3!
Yeah, and that makes me kind of worry. Stu was saying, it ended... The Hobbit ends right where we thought it would. And he's like,
yes.
You have enough material to do one more movie.
Right. And he's making it
the second half of the book.
Well, if you look at it, they still have the entire forest of Mirkwood to go. So you have Bjorn, you have the spiders, you have the Elven King,
well,
you have making it to...
Yeah, but the second one is called The Desolation of Smaug. So yeah. I think it's
going
to go...
So they're going to get there.
They're going to get there, and then the third one is a battle?
No way. There's no way.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they do the third one, because...
People were like a half an hour each, and they were huge and long.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you can't make... And I remember going in, I was like, all right, I can accept three movies if they're not 3 hours long. I was like, if he made 3 2-hour movies,
yeah,
that would be the same as two three-hour movies, and I'll pay three times. If you just want another $10,
mm-hmm.
I'll give that to you. But then it was 3 hours, and I'm like, what are we gonna
do? Well, it makes me wonder what extras from the appendices and, God help us, the Silmarillion they're gonna throw in there.
I don't know. What I'm hoping, the one thing I would like to see in the appendices is that there's a whole section of Aragorn and Gandalf hunting Gollum. And that would be an easy way to get Gollum back, because he only has one scene in The Hobbit.
Right.
And it was amazing. It blew away anything that he did in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And he became this cultural icon because of the first movies, that people are going to want to see him again. I think
right.
People that haven't read the book are going to be like, when is Gollum coming back? So that I could see being done. The whole fight with the Necromancer, which should be Gandalf and Saruman fighting Sauron before he's
right.
powerful enough to move back to Mordor.
Yeah, because that's,
yeah, and that's what they've been
something
doing.
Like having seen The Hobbit. I've never read the book, so I'm like, oh, cool. Gollum was in this for a little while, but he'll be back I assume he's going to be back in the next movie.
In
like,
the book, he's only in that one scene.
Yeah. And I think that's as it's coming from somebody who hasn't read the books, who's just a fan of the movies, seeing that movie and seeing Gollum, it's like, oh, cool, they brought him back. This is him before, like, you know, the Lord of the Rings nonsense. And then it's like, oh, he'll be back in the next one because he's gonna chase him. He's going to go to try to get the ring from...
That's what happens in the appendices. And what happens is he doesn't find... He's looking for Baggins. That's all he remembers is Baggins. He doesn't find him until Fellowship, when he starts following him.
In fact, he gets captured and gets taken to Mordor.
And you see that in the prologue of Lord of the
Rings.
They
did that in Lord of the Rings.
They'll probably show that.
Yeah, but they've been doing a lot of the extra bits of The Hobbit are them setting up for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
because they are treating it as a prequel.
Yeah.
And that's my big problem with it, is that I feel like... After I saw the first Hobbit, I'm like, you know, maybe Peter Jackson wasn't interested in shooting The Hobbit. He just wanted to make more Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
So he took The Hobbit, which is a different kind of book, and then turned it into Lord of the Rings Episode One, The Phantom Ring.
The real question is, what does Peter Jackson do with his life when this is all done?
Well, the one thing I'm excited about doing is that they did announce earlier this year... As soon as he has finished The Third Rings, he's making Tintin 2.
Oh, yeah. That's
that would rule. Yeah.
With Spielberg producing, they're going to switch roles.
Yeah.
And then they said they're thinking of making it as a trilogy, and then the third one they would co-direct. And we didn't plan on talking about this, but everyone in this room loves Tintin.
It's awesome.
Yes, it's great.
And so should you, listeners. Because it didn't. I was surprised it didn't do better in this country. I mean, I know Tintin's not known here. And
no, it's not.
I had heard of it just being a comics fan, but I'd never read it. But you figure Spielberg doing an animated film,
you think people would
be
all over that.
Huge marketing draw.
And that's something in Europe, it's in every bookstore everywhere. There's not a shop in
the movie made $500 million, so Europe has greenlit the sequel.
Yeah.
Because I think it only made like 50 in this country.
Right. Around the world, where it's an established franchise and has been for decades, since the 1930s at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is like this is like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's been around almost as long as Superman.
Yeah. Yeah, so. He's like 40s, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, no, 30s.
Really?
The earliest ones, Tinted in Tibet and things like that, or the Lotus, Black Lotus, I think.
Yeah, one of the reasons I love it, and Steven and I were talking about this, is that when I was sitting in the theater watching it, in the middle of it, when you get to about the plane scene, I go, oh, Crystal Skull was not Spielberg's fault at all.
Thank you, George Lucas.
Yes.
I was like, this is the Indiana Jones film he would have made if Lucas wasn't like, aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And giant ants.
Giant ants and aliens.
And I think it's easy to see.
And several useless supporting characters.
Yeah. And let's just bring back and recycle old characters.
Yeah.
But
let's not bring Sala back.
Right. You know, but it's
let's
very...
Not, oh, and here, if we get it through, let's not invite Sala to our wedding.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
That's weird.
It's a little weird.
That's rude.
Jarvis Davies, obviously working.
Right.
Obviously around. You're telling me Sala would not get on a plane from Egypt?
Yeah.
To see Indian Marin get married? Last time he seen him, he put him on a boat.
That's true. Yep. He didn't know if they were going to get killed by Nazis.
No, nobody knew if they were going to get killed by Nazis.
And if, what's his name, Sean Connery wasn't retired for acting, would they have brought him back in this movie?
Yeah, what I heard was Lucas asked him, he would not come out of retirement for it, and it actually was like kind of an argument between them.
Oh, really?
What I believe...
Well, if I had known what that movie was going to turn into, and I wouldn't... Maybe he had like... a premonition that the movie was going to...
Connery's got good instincts, because Connery turned down the role in Star Trek V to do Last Crusade.
I think he learned from Highlander 2. There should have been only one.
That's great. Yeah, so now also The Hobbit, the 48 frames per second. Did you notice it? Did you care? Did you like it, not like it?
I didn't really notice anything. The thing I noticed most was the 3D, and most of that was some of the gratuitous stuff. There was a lot of going over cliffs, I noticed.
A lot of spears being thrown.
Spears
being thrown, sweeping landscape shots, which you should expect in a Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah, it took me three movies to get over 3D. And I'll tell you exactly what the three movies were. So Avatar, thought it was amazing. Like, at Avatar, I kept leaning forward in my seat to see around trees.
That's awesome. I missed that in theaters.
I was so mystified by it. Then I got the Blu-ray, and I didn't miss a 3D. Second 3D movie I saw was Alice in Wonderland. And I was like, that's okay. It's pretty good. And then the third movie I saw in 3D was Thor, which we went to. And I went, this is entirely useless. And I was done.
I can't stand 3D.
I think I've seen a few since. I've seen Avengers. I've seen Men in Black 3. I've seen Amazing Spider-Man. I've seen The Hobbit all in 3D. And I just don't care anymore.
Yeah, the only movie that I've seen where it has really added something was Avengers. I mean, I saw Up in 3D. When that first came out, there were two scenes where it was useful. I saw Thor, and I thought, what a waste. Avengers came out, and I'm like, finally, it adds something to the story. That depth adds something to the story. With Hobbit, I thought that they were just throwing things in to make it 3D. I mean, that's what SCTV was making fun of with 3D House of Stewart. Yeah, would you like a donut?
It's like... it's very gimmicky. This was a phase, what, in like late 80s? Didn't they do everything in 3D?
Like 50s originally. And then it kind of made a comeback in the 80s.
That's what I think. I think it's like Friday every couple of years, people like forget about it, then they bring it back, and it gets gimmicky, and then they
Friday
stop doing it.
3 was in 3D.
Yeah.
And I remember like some stuff in the early, and that's when it was still the red and blue.
Yeah, like lenses. The goggles and then, or whatever.
Yeah, and then Captain EO was the first one with like the polarized lenses, and then all of a sudden with Avatar, everything's in 3D.
I think,
3D.
Yeah, everyone's trying to capture like the lightning in a bottle Avatar had, where it's like, this movie did so well and was so renowned for like visually, they're like, yeah, everything should be in 3D now.
Yeah, I'll be impressed with 3D when I don't have to wear any glasses.
Yeah.
And that, if I can go to a movie and go, oh, this movie's in 3D.
Or if they can get rid of the ViewMaster effect. Because it's like stacking up 2D images.
Yeah.
It's not really 3D. There's, you don't have curves where you can, like you said, when you're trying to look around the trees, you couldn't because there were no curves there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not a fan at all. I will not go see movies in 3D.
No, and you know what? Honestly, the last three movies I've seen in 3D, it was just because... that one was playing at a better time than the 2D one. And it's like, all right, we have this much time to go. It's like, we can go at 7 in 3D or we can wait till 8:30 for 2D. Let's just go to 3D.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out of my way to see
it.
3D.
Yeah.
Or to avoid it.
Yeah, the 48 frames per second, it didn't really bother me. It did feel a little like video. Like it was kind of that crystal clear, but it didn't really pull me into it the way Lord of the Rings did. Now, I really want to see The Hobbit again, but I want to see it in 2D, 24 frames, because I want to see it as close to Lord of the Rings as possible.
Yeah.
Right.
Because if he's going out of his way to turn The Hobbit into Lord of the Rings, let me see how it looks stacked up against it. Because I know, as I said, I'm a franchise whore. I have the Star Wars prequels on Blu-ray.
Ouch.
Even if these Hobbit movies get worse...
I'm going
to own all three.
I don't think they are. It's a different vibe. I don't think he's going to go full dark like Lord of the Rings because the material just isn't like that.
You can't grow something dark out of, it's just...
Right.
Yeah, but he's really
not there.
Trying.
Well, this is...
Because everything's like...
Well, actually, you said there's like giant spider monsters are in the next one.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That could be pretty dark.
Basically, the Return of the King Spider, but there's like 30 of them.
Yeah. And I think like, okay, there you go. It's going to be a little weird.
Yeah. But this is the... Lord of the Rings was the big blockbuster movie. It was the action movie. it appealed to people who had never read the books. Mm. It was just a great movie. I think this is the geeks movie. This is the Tolkien geek movie where I think he's throwing in everything in the kitchen sink.
Like,
I
said, this is it.
Yeah,
Tolkien
didn't really write
anything else that they can go back to. This is like the last Harry Potter. It's like, we can't do anymore, so let's throw everything we can
in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember even seeing I don't even know how or what year that movie came out or how old I was, but I remember seeing the trailer. Not even the trailer. I saw the teaser poster for Lord of the Rings, and it's like something about a ring. And I was so disappointed it wasn't Green Lantern. And I was just like so mad. I'm like, what is Lord of the Rings?
And then they made Green Lantern.
And then I was even more disappointed.
And then you were disappointed even more.
Right. Yeah, it was terrible.
I have yet to watch Green Lantern twice, and I own it.
Yeah, I've watched it a couple times at the store, but that's mostly because of whoever that actress is.
The boring one, who's hot.
Yeah, the hot one.
Yeah, Blake Lively.
Who's Blake not Lively. Lively. No, but I guess in real life she's a blonde, and that's kind of disappointing.
Well,
I guess that's
something they like to do in superhero films is they like to put the men in costumes and they like to change the women's hair.
Yeah, instead of just hire an actress with that hair color.
Yes. Because, you know, they made Famke Janssen a redhead.
Yep.
They made Bryce Dallas Howard a blonde.
Who's Pumpkin Face from the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans?
They made Lance Henriksen, who played Mary Jane, I believe.
Well, thank heavens they left Black Widow alone.
No, well, what's
no,
going
she was
blonde.
Still red hair.
She blonde or?
She's blonde
she's
in real life.
She's had every color hair, depending.
No, the actress is blonde, but yeah. she's done red before. She's done red before.
Yeah.
She had red hair in Avengers. They also went from long to short between our movies.
I think that was a mistake.
And I thought it made a better action figure.
You
cut the hair at neck length, you can move the head.
That's true. I'll give you that, but there's probably less people that are interested in the action figure than there are in the movie.
There are enough that they make one.
That's true. And they made some very expensive ones.
All right. Now let's go on to the final section, which is our recommendation section, which we're calling the greatest thing in the world this week. Because as stuff comes into the store all the time and we have the regular Netflix account running, there's always something which we're completely obsessed with until the next Wednesday when we're completely obsessed with something entirely...
It's very shooting star. It's like, ooh, shiny, different. Pretty.
Yeah.
Squirrel!
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's very much Squirrel.
We should just call it Squirrel.
That might be a better name. We'll let you know next time.
So what I'm reading right now, which I actually... heard about on Word Balloon, and we had the chance to meet John Fentress a couple weeks ago, which is a great podcast and one of the reasons we're doing this. Robert Greenberger has written a Star Trek unofficial chronology, which is really interesting because he has it both ways. And Greenberger, if you don't know, was a Marvel and DC editor, and he edited and wrote a lot of the Star Trek comics in the 80s. If you've ever read the 80s Star Trek comics... Set between the movies, Peter David wrote a lot of that stuff.
Yeah,
and it's really good. And like he had to make do with like a dead Spock and a blown up Enterprise for a long time.
Wow,
and they're really great. Unlike say the Marvel Star Wars in between Empire and Jedi when they're just like, you know what, now Lando's Luke's friend.
Yeah, because you know, and he's stealing Han's clothes.
Yes, yeah,
and driving his car and stealing his girlfriend.
His
best friend.
Did he drink his liquor too?
He probably did.
Oh, he definitely did. But he restocked the bar.
Ah, yeah. There you go.
Did you know what? That never
with
occurred
Colt 45.
To me. That never occurred to me before. And Empire Strikes Back, he's flying the Millennium Falcon, which he has to look for. He is wearing Han Solo's vest.
I think.
He took his
Lando
and his sidekick.
Yeah, and Leia. He has everything that made Han. He's tried to like
except
take.
The mustache.
Lando is a bad guy. He is a villain in Star Wars. He's not a hero. Karma will tell you different, but I'll stand by that. Lando's a villain.
But it really bothers me now that he's wearing Han's clothes.
Yep.
Like almost like it's the Starfleet uniform. Like if you fly the Millennium Falcon, you gotta wear this vest.
It's like, yeah, it's like the Millennium Falcon's like pilot gear.
Does it have a name tag on it?
Crossing guard, yeah. It says, hello, I'm the captain of the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Has no name on it.
Yeah.
Because then you can just pass it over.
Right.
Now it really makes me mad that Alec Guinness didn't put the vest on at one point.
Right.
And go, well, I will show you the way to Alderaan.
Yes. I will fly the Millennium Falcon. But that's the thing. It's like no matter where you go in the universe, if you're wearing Han Solo's clothes, that's not even Han Solo's clothes. It's the pilot of the Millennium Falcon.
And you know what? In Empire Strikes Back, he wears a jacket and horrible things happen to him.
See?
He gets it lost. He crashes it into a worm.
That's true.
Then he gets frozen.
In carbonite.
They put him inside a space heater.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They torture him.
Strap him to a space heater in a jacket.
They torch him.
And you know what? Return of the Jedi, back to the vest. Mm-hmm. He's blind when he has a shirt.
That's true.
Oh, my God. The vest is the source of Han Solo's power.
So the lesson here is the clothes makes the man.
Clothes make the man. Yeah.
And that's why Luke is always changing his outfit. The more powerful he gets. You know, first he wears a bathrobe.
Yeah.
Then he wears a jumpsuit.
And then he goes to,
then
like,
he wears a badass Jedi.
All in black.
Yeah. He actually wears the Wrath of Khan uniform.
He's dressing
black.
Like a villain.
Yeah. He's chilling that's like a villain. Cool.
And he's got a Michael Jackson single glove.
That's all you need.
Because it's 83, baby.
Yep.
I love this. The source of Han Solo's power.
It's his best.
And what was in those pockets then?
He had a lot of. Four. He has a lot of pockets.
There's a lot of pockets. Keys to Millennium Falcon?
Probably.
Trojans?
Maybe Trojans.
Maybe. Maybe. He is kind of like the Kirk of Star Wars in that way.
Oh, I always liked Han.
I love that. Well, I'm totally sidetracked.
Wow.
Well, anyway, the Star Trek book I was talking about was... Greenberger really walks the line of being someone who... He was at the very first Star Trek convention that ever happened in New York in, like, 72. And then,
Or a writer?
As a fan. Like, before he was a writer. Then he worked for DC, and he did the comics. So he has this insider's look into the Star Trek franchise. So he knows a lot about it. But on the other hand, since it's unauthorized, he is telling stories I had never heard before. And, like, the way he describes Roddenberry is kind of what you suspected when other people talked about Roddenberry, but you never wanted to believe it. Because, you know, like, when, like, all those really late interview clips of Roddenberry where he's all kind of fat and lumpy and hunched over, and he's like, in the future, nobody ever gets mad at anybody anymore. And we make things out of dilithium crystals. And in Hollywood, we have dilithium crystals, and they put them in the lights.
So he's
and
a happy drunk.
Yeah, part of you was thinking, I think he's drunk. He was drunk all the time.
I was going to say, he must be all the time,
he was
then.
Drunk all the time, rewriting everybody and sleeping with everyone. Any woman who was on the original Star Trek was there because they slept with Roddenberry.
Wow.
That was never mentioned. And it just goes into, like, just all the infighting going from the series.
So this
it
book's...
also said everything you thought about Shatner. And the more I get into Shatner, the nastier profile I start to build in my head.
I'm convinced he's just like a total scumbag.
Yeah, Bill Monroe, who will be on the show on the phone, is a total Shatner file. Like, to the point where he's more of a Shatner fan than a Star Trek fan. So we have seen lots
Shatner's
of Shatner.
Shatner's bigger than Star Trek.
Yes. Well, if you ask Shatner,
so
he'll tell you the same thing.
You mean you haven't heard the
album? Exactly, right? So the book isn't history of Star Trek.
The book is the history of the production.
The production.
And it also goes into the conventions, like the guys who created the conventions, the first fanzines.
Okay.
And kind of how Star Trek really built the sci-fi world that we know today. Because before that, there were sci-fi conventions, but they were all talking about Asimov and Bradbury. They were all about novels.
Yeah.
And Star Trek was the first show to have its own. And they said when Star Wars came out, those Star Trek conventions adopted it. Because they were like, oh my God, something new. So there wasn't this division, which I don't think you see the division of Star Trek and Star Wars fans until the prequels come out and Voyager is still on the air and Deep Space Nine is still on the air.
Yeah, it's like choose one or the other.
Yeah, because between their histories, they it was like kind of like the high points of Marvel DC. Like DC's always up when Marvel's down and vice versa. It was like Star Wars was always out when Star Trek was off the air, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Wrath of Khan in 82, Jedi in 83. They were never in direct competition. We did the New York Comic Con once. We had a stand-up show at the New York Comic Con. And one of the comics who's a great comic, Jared Logan, got into a fight with the New York Jedi for doing like one Star Trek joke about midichlorians.
That's awesome.
And it occurred to me, I was like, Star Trek fans have been battered so much. First of all, they were the original nerds when you could really beat up a nerd.
Yeah, you couldn't. Yeah. The nerd is cool now.
Yeah.
Well, there's generations of nerd. Of course, John and I recently went to TARDIS Chicago, and we ran into
that. Hardcore, old school nerds.
Yes, Doctor Who nerd. Nothing like a Doctor Who nerd. But
the women all had sinus infections. That kind of nerd.
Yeah.
We're like, I believe that Sylvester McCoy didn't really understand what Tom Baker was trying to do, and his imitation was very pale.
That's awesome.
It was every panel turned into that, and I couldn't get enough of it.
And then there's a 20-year gap to the college kids wearing the David Tennant stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but well, TARDIS this year, since they had Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred, was very classic based, too.
Yes.
So they really brought out the old fans. And that's what Star Trek fans used to be. You know, when I went to my first convention in like 83, and I felt uncomfortable.
Yeah.
because I was like, these are the people I won't talk to, and I'm a 13-year-old.
Right.
with six subscriptions to Marvel Comics and a videotape of Star Wars that ran on CBS.
That's awesome.
Was it the Christmas special?
No, it was the first time they ran it, and they had extras between every commercial, so I taped all the commercials. Where they would go to somebody's house, it was like, he has every Kenner toy.
Yeah.
It's like John's looking in the back, going, I want that, and I want that, and I want that, and I want that.
Got it, got it, got it, got it, miss it, got it.
Guy made an Endor diorama. I was like, I don't have my make skills. But the Star Trek authorized, but if you're a Star Trek fan, it really covers it from both angles, and... I'm huge, and I know Joe's an old Star Trek fan. Steven has a mental block, which will be an entire podcast.
Yeah, now, we'll get into that.
Now, Steven, what have you been into this week?
Saga. Brian K. Vaughan, Image Comics. It started about 6 months ago, and I think the seventh issue came out maybe 2 weeks ago.
So it's monthly.
Yeah, just got to it now.
Is it limited, or is it ongoing?
It's going to be ongoing. It was supposed to... I guess if it didn't sell well, he had an ending for like the third or fourth issue. I guess this is something a lot of the writers do where, hey, I'm going to pitch this new book. Walking Dead did it. You pitch a book.
It could be a miniseries.
Could be six
sell.
Issues long if it doesn't sell, so I can end it. Or I've got 200 issues.
Yes, yeah, so my story arc can close it.
Exactly. And I think like Why the Last Man, which he previously wrote, this will go at least 60 to 100 issues, I guess, because it's doing so well.
Yeah, it is Brian K. Vaughan's a draw. So like
easily, yeah. And this is his first comic
book. He's one of those
writers
that has fans that will that do what I don't do.
Yeah.
Which is follow a guy from book to book.
Exactly.
I haven't read Neil Gaiman since Sandman, except when he did those two issues of Batman.
I was going to say, you'll read his Batman, but not yet. Yeah.
Because I was going to buy it anyway.
So this is his first work, I think, since Why the Last Man? Because he was doing Lost, right? Wasn't he?
He was
writing for TV
Lost
for a
around
while.
The time that Jeff Loeb and Paul Dini were there.
Yes.
Because Damon Lindelof was hiring...
Pulled a bunch of comic writers into it. Yeah. Yeah. And it's the book. There's something for everybody in this book. It's awesome. It's the seventh issue just came out. The trade's available now, which
cool.
I've ordered like 20 of. Just because it's like, Dave can recommend it. It's worth reading. You can do, we'll set up a review for it. You can put it on
the
website.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. If you go to ComericsComics.com, you'll find some of our reviews. A lot of movie reviews and some comic reviews.
Yeah.
Which I think this podcast will...
We'll tie into,
tie
yeah.
into as
and
well.
And I think, when Saga, it should show up Wednesday. We'll get you the trade and then you can write the review. But it's awesome. It's basically, it's out in space. You know, it's aliens or whatever. And it's two races at war with each other, and one race lives on a moon orbiting a planet with the other race. And to not destroy the planet or the moon and throw, themselves into deep space or something, they contract the war out to other planets on other in the solar system. And basically...
And this is entirely self-contained, right? It's a Dark Horse book?
Completely self-contained. Okay. It's Image, actually.
Oh, it's Image. Okay.
Yeah. And it's basically a woman from one race and a dude from another race fall in love, have a kid, and they're on the run. And there's like weird robots with televisions for heads and bounty hunters that are giant spider women.
I was
it's
right about
crazy.
To ask, does this take place in the Image universe?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Image universe?
Like, with Invincible and Spawn and all
not
that.
Even Invincible. Spawn and Wildcats and Savage Dragon.
Pit.
All crossing over the Pit.
And the Max. Yeah.
Yep.
It was a dark time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would definitely recommend Saga. The writing's awesome. And Fiona Staples is doing some of the best art. Being published right now. It's awesome. It's an awesome book.
Joe, what are you reading?
This has been the week of the Snowmen, actually.
Oh, right, the Doctor Who Christmas
yes,
special.
Yes, the Doctor Who Christmas special came out.
Sci-fi show which Steven cannot get into.
I've seen the same episode twice.
How long did it take you to get through 30 Rock?
Oh, God, I finished the season in less than a day, I think.
Yeah, how long? Blackadder was a day.
Yep.
You're doing Bob's Burgers now.
If it's a comedy, give me 24 hours and I'll get through everything.
How long have you been working on Firefly?
Oh, I watched... God, I don't even think I finished the first episode. Firefly,
there are
Star
less
Trek,
episodes of Firefly than
Doctor
there are.
Who. I mean, if it's sci-fi, and I don't know what it is, Battlestar Galactica, never finished. And I probably got to like the
Lost,
last season on that.
The X-Files.
Gave up on Lost.
All five Star Treks.
All five Star Trek movies.
I think I'm going to check giving you Babylon 5 off my list.
Babylon
right
5,
now.
Yeah.
Space Above and Beyond.
I did see the Star Trek movie with the flying whales in space, where they go back in
movies
time.
Movies, you don't seem to have a problem.
Movies is fun, because it's like, there's no commitment to a movie. It's like, it's on 2 hours, 2.5 hours, you're good, but it's like a show you got to commit to. I think I have commitment problems, but only when it's sci-fi. If it's a comedy, I'm all over that.
They have DVRs now.
I have Netflix at the store. You think I'd have no problem with this, but it's like, I have unlimited time. I'm at the store like 60 hours a week.
That's true. Yeah, so if you want to see Steven, that's where he is.
Yeah, all the time. You know where to find me.
But the Snowman was the latest Christmas special.
Latest Christmas special from Doctor Who.
Kicks off a season, right?
Yeah, it kicks off the season.
Usually, right now, this is the midpoint of the season because they only did five for the fall.
Well, they've broken the seasons into two recently.
Yeah.
So it's kind of...
Instead of doing 10 at once, we're doing like
five. It's like a trend. The Walking Dead, I think, does the same thing where they take a break mid-season, have a short season finale or whatever, and then come out with the next
every
season.
Every show used to do 20 a year,
yeah,
and then they went down to like 13 and they ran them in a row, and now they're doing 10 and spreading it out over 6 months, which is okay because if the episodes are really good, I mean, I would rather have 10 really great episodes than 10
than 20 mediocre ones,
yeah, right? With five great episodes.
I've gotten that way about beer too nowadays. I'd rather have two good ones than 20 bad ones.
How about
20 good ones?
No, that would be ideal.
That would be nice. Yeah, I think I'm still operating on college budget, so, you know, Pabst Blue Ribbon is, the go-to.
But the Snowman is a pretty big turning point. It almost felt like a new season.
Exactly. Well, it had a little bit of everything, because it had some old characters that you really like. You know, it had some of the aliens that were helping him out. It had comedy. It had some funny points. It had drama, and it had some mystery, too, because they're bringing along a new companion. The Doctor has companions that accompany him on travel.
It's really weird this time.
Yeah, because usually it's the companion trying to come to terms with this weird alien doctor. The tables have been turned. Now he's trying to find out who this companion is who keeps dying on him. It's like, my God, they killed Clara.
She is the Kenny of Doctor
Who.
Yeah,
I was going to say, this sounds like that South Park character.
Yes, yeah. It is. It's she's the Kenny of Doctor Who. And she was in Captain America for 2 seconds.
Which girl was she in then?
She is one of the two girls that go to the World's Fair with Steve Rogers and Bucky.
Oh, okay.
She's the shorter one. The cuter one. So the one you remember.
Yeah, there you go.
But Stephen Moffat's like Joss Whedon. I just trust him.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, I don't know where you're going, but you're smarter than me. So usually where you go makes perfect sense. Although with Doctor Who has this wonderful, where they're three steps removed from Star Trek in terms of being grounded in any kind of reality, was they just give you enough sci-fi BS.
Right.
Where you buy it in the episode and you go, perfect, what else could it be? And then you talk about it with somebody a day later and you're like, that didn't make any sense.
That's right. Awesome.
But he sold it at the time. So you just go, that's a good job you did there.
Yeah, but Stephen Moffat pulls that rabbit out of his head all the time. And then you go back and you're like, wait a minute, what happened there?
It's like a magician. I saw, there's a YouTube clip of Stephen Moffat in an interview, and somebody says, in the classic series, they revealed that the Doctor can only regenerate 13 times. So
what number Doctor are we on?
Matt 11. Smith is the 11th. And he says, so what happens when the guy who replaces Matt Smith wants to leave the show? Are you going to end Doctor Who forever? And Moffat goes, well, we could do that. Or we could write something. And that's when I'm like, yeah, you can just, it doesn't matter. You can get yourself out of any jam as long as you have a decent way to get out of it. You don't have to be trapped by your own rules, which was the problem with Star Trek later with things like Voyager, where they were just kind of running in circles of their own, like, spatial anomalies and bio gel packs.
They'd fire a tachyon beam at it. And
yeah, it's got really boring. Don't watch Voyager.
I'll skip it.
but it's Doctor Who Snowman.
You watched it for the fourth time this morning, since Wednesday.
Awesome. When is it coming back? Do you know when they did a trailer for the second half of the season? But is there a date?
I don't know. I think it's sometime during the spring or summer.
Okay.
So we got a while to go.
All right. Well, we covered everything. We actually ran longer than I thought we would. We are all finished with our coffee.
Yes.
Nobody went nuts.
Not this time.
I am sorely disappointed.
I didn't knock anything over. I'm
left out the coffee content.
Mission accomplished.
Well, both of you guys were afraid of tapping the microphone, so you stayed in your seats.
That's true.
I'm proud of you for that. But we'll be back either weekly or biweekly. I'm making no promises because I don't want anybody to say, where's
the next one?
Where's the next one? If you want to get in touch with us, if you have any questions or if you complaints.
I think we're blithering idiots.
Yeah, I think we'll set up a Twitter feed for this. But right now, you can reach me, John Clark, at NotInMyBook on Twitter. Steven, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
We'll be at the shop Monday through Thursday, 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. And by email, steven@vbrown@chimerascomics.com.
Right. And you should be able to link. We should have a link right to the website.
Yeah.
From the site. Joe, Joe does not want you to talk to
him. I am incommunicado. No, just you could probably best reach me through John.
Yeah, there you go. That's perfect, Joe.
Double my amount of tweets because no one follows me. Yeah. And I'm talking about you, Jeff Johns.
If I knew anything about Twitter, I'd follow you, John.
You follow me on Facebook. It's basically the same thing without pictures.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, this has been Caffeinated Comics. And when we come up with a good sign-off, we will use it.
Perfect.
Talk to you soon.